Good morning and welcome back to our number two of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frain, is at the controls. In this hour of Focus 580, we'll be talking about current events in Somalia. For the past 16 years, fighting and famine and disease have devastated that country. It is thought that as many as a million people may have died as a result. Back in 1991, the military government of Siad Barre was overthrown by rival clan armies, and into the power vacuum created rushed a collection of warlords and others who sought power and profit in the ensuing chaos. That situation essentially has continued. In 2004, an interim government was set up involving some of the country's main warlords and politicians. This was the 14th attempt to establish a government since 1991. It was based in the city of Baidoa and had little influence outside the city, even though it was supported by the United Nations. In 2006, an Islamist militia, the Union of Islamic Courts, rose to challenge the government. At one time, it controlled much of the country, including the city of Mogadishu. They were driven out of the city at the end of last year by government forces with the help of Ethiopia and covert support from the United States. Clearly, though, the Islamists were not beaten. Last month, Mogadishu was again rocked by fighting between Islamist insurgents and forces of the government. In this part of the show, we'll try to talk a little bit about what has gone on in Somalia recently, but get a better understanding of the larger picture as we talk with two guests. Both of them have been with us before on the program to talk about Somalia. They are Abdulwali Ali. He is assistant professor of economics at Niagara University. That's in Niagara, New York. He grew up and went to school in Somalia. He has a bachelor's degree in economics from the Somali National University. He's also educated in the United States, has degrees in economics from Vanderbilt, also in public administration from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, and also his PhD is from George Mason University. Also joining us is Lydian Captains. She is the Kendall Hodder Professor of History at Wellesley College, where she teaches African and Middle Eastern history in the Department of History. She started out as an expert on Sudan and lived and worked in the Sudan. She taught at the University of Khartoum. For that first book, she did extensive field work in Darfur, in western Darfur. She also has been involved in the study of Somali history and oral literature. That's where most of her major research interest lies today. She co-founded the Somali Institute for Research and Development. That's a small nonprofit organizing public forums in Somali for the Somali community of Boston. She has also published widely about the history of both Somalia and Sudan. And both guests are joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk, questions are certainly welcome, as always. People can call in locally here, 333-9455. Also, there is a toll-free line, and so if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. That's 800-222-9455, and the local number is 333-9455. So at any point here, you can certainly pick up the telephone and join us with your comments. And we will say hello to our guest, Professor Ali. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being with us once again. And Professor Captains, hello.
Good afternoon.
We appreciate you both giving us some of your time. I'd like to try to start out, and I realize this is probably a complicated question, but I'm sure that for people who have heard my thumbnail sketch, assuming that it's good enough to start us out, the question I think that many people would have is, why is it that now all these years, these 16 years, that someone within the country, perhaps with assistance from outside, has not managed to pull together enough of the competing interests here to have a stable government?
Abdulwali, shall I start?
Yes.
David, I think that is an excellent, excellent question. And the only answer that you may give is that isn't an institution at the moment doing exactly what you are saying, namely the transitional federal government. And I actually was very impressed with your summary. So the transitional federal government was put together in 2004 It was a meeting of 2.5 years. I'm not sure whether that's a world record, but it certainly was a long time. Supported by the EU, by IGAD, the international, group for, can you help me out? IGAD? International Governmental Agency for Development, US, Ethiopia. And so in the U.S., and I'm interested to speak to an American audience today, is that U.S. spared resources nor energy to put this together. And so in 2004, we were mildly optimistic, even though, and you were quite right, this was a government put together or consisting of warlords imposed on the Somali people, but everybody from the smallest village on had delegations at that meeting. What went wrong? Well, here I think the U.S. went wrong, because after having put this together with the international community, with the Somalis themselves in a variety of organizations, with this very unpromising material of warlords, I have to admit, right, then suddenly started hired on the side a group of warlords in Mogadishu, we call them the Mogadishu warlords, to chase Islamists. And at that moment, those that group of warlords began to feel that they were better than the TFG because they had the support of America. They overreached, and they then were defeated by the Islamic Courts Union, which also felt that the U.S. was no longer supporting the TFG, and also overreached, and then got beaten by, or temporarily defeated, partially defeated, maybe not so temporarily, by the TFG supported by Ethiopia and the U.S. You see the dance that the U.S. did?
Mm-hmm.
They should have stuck to their commitment in 2004, I think.
I'll turn to Dr. Ali, and you can add anything that you'd like, but I guess I'm particularly interested in having you talk about the Islamic militia, the force that then did indeed come, the Union of Islamic Courts that came up in 2006, and that for a time seemed to be the power in Mogadishu, and whether you thought that their presence, their interest in setting up an Islamic State or imposing Sharia was particularly a problem. I mean, was the United States wrong in apparently worrying that this would be a possible staging ground for anti-American militant Islam?
That's a very good question. Let me take this opportunity to thank you and NPR for having a program in Somalia, and Somalia needs all the attention it can get. Mm-hmm. The Islamic Union court in Somalia, it started back in the 1990s, and it was composed of 8 or 9 tribal courts. And basically, the objective of those courts were to bring law and order in the capital city, Mogadishu. Now, the problem is the Islamic Courts Union was overtaken by a radical group who were affiliated with Al-Qaeda. And they started to attract international jihadists from all over the world. And three of those were the Al-Qaeda members who were involved in the 1998 bombing of U.S. embassies in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam, Kenya and Tanzania. So the threat of Al-Qaeda in Somalia is a real one. And Osama bin Laden called Somalia a battleground in his war on the West. Actually, he called Somalia as Al-Qaeda's southern garrison in their fight against the West. So basically, although they started with this good intention to bring law and order in the capital city of Mogadishu, they were overtaken by this radical group called Al-Shabaab, or means the youth, headed by someone by the name Adel Hashairo, who was trained in Afghanistan. At the beginning, they were good, and they were they had these noble ideas of bringing law and order. But unfortunately, they were overtaken by this radical group. And we have to understand that the threat of Al-Qaeda in Somalia is a really real one. In July 2006, for example, Osama bin Laden called Abdullahi Yusuf, the Somali president, as an agent of foreign powers. Basically, what he means was the West. And he called the Islamic forces to kill him. In September 2006, the local agents of Al-Qaeda heeded the call, and the president narrowly escaped an assassination attempt by a suicide bomb outside the parliament. He
killed his brother.
And yes, absolutely, 11 people, including his brother, died. So the threat of Al-Qaeda is real, and the suspicion that the U.S. government has that the Union of Islamic Courts was a threat to the American interest in the Horn of Africa and in East Africa was a genuine and a real one.
Mm. Well, then here, though, maybe I'll turn back to Professor Captains. Then, though, it sounds as if what Dr. Ali says is that the United States would actually have reason to be concerned about Al-Qaeda in Somalia, then do you think that the United States took the wrong approach in trying to deal with that when they picked out a group of warlords in Mogadishu to get to chase the Islamists out, and that really was not successful? It sounds as if there was reason for the United States to be concerned, but what did the United States, do you think, take the wrong approach in trying to act on that concern?
Yes, I think so, because the United States had put its support behind the transitional federal government. The Islamic courts at this moment were not in place, right? Mm. There might have been existed people who were doing things locally, but they were not. They were not an organized group and playing a political role beyond a few neighborhoods of Mogadishu at this point. So the United States, instead of doing what it is doing now, which is to support the TFG and Abdullahi Yusuf with all his faults, and they are many, you know, has been able or was has rooted out Islamists in Puntland before he became president of the TFG. Instead of supporting the TFG, the Islamic courts are not there. They pick out a number of Mogadishu warlords who were actually part of the TFG and begins to and pays them. You see, so that is where I think they made the major mistake. The only other thing I would add, if you let me, David, is
sure.
That there is this international component, and I think we really do have a proxy war now in Somalia. And the moment we mention Al-Qaeda, we should really, in generally, regret the fact that Somalia right now needs this international intervention and attracts unpopular and unwanted international intervention. But the question is, I think it's inevitable right now. And the U.S., but what we have to realize that the Islamic courts, therefore, apart from the radical group taking over, they also were unwilling to work with the TFG. They also got the illusion that they were more important than the TFG that came out of the 2.5 years in Kenya. And this may now be changing, and they maybe come into the arena of negotiation. And as the president of the TFG said yesterday, I think it was, they will have to come in through the groups of people who elected them, and not as an Islamist party.
Uh-huh. Let me turn it back to Dr. Ali. The transitional federal government turned to Ethiopia for military support against the Islamic militias. And apparently Ethiopia was willing to do that, at least in part, because in eastern Ethiopia there's a part of the country where there are a lot of people who are ethnic Somalis living, and the charge was that the Somali Islamists were stirring up unrest among people who were interested in autonomy or independence in that part of Ethiopia. So the Ethiopians sent their troops into Somalia. This, I think, with a lot of Somalis was extremely unpopular. They don't like the Ethiopians being there. Did the fact that the transitional federal government have to go to Ethiopia for help, is that a bad thing in the long run for the government?
I think the talk about Ethiopia and Ethiopian enmity towards Somalia is misplaced. Ethiopia came to help Somalia, and I believe that Ethiopia came to save Somalia from itself. By coming in, it has two purposes, dual purpose. The first one was Ethiopia felt a threat from the Somali front, because Eritrea which has a problem with Ethiopia and had a war in 2000 or 2002. It started a proxy war using Somali territory. And they supported two groups. One is the Oromo Liberation Front, and the other group is Ogaden National Liberation Front, which both of them are waging a guerrilla war against Ethiopia. So Eritrea used these two groups to have a proxy, to create a problem for Ethiopia in the eastern part, in the eastern front. On the other hand, also they came here to support a neighbor, which is Somalia, to bring law and order to a country that had no government for the last 70 years. And to be honest, Somalia cannot afford to have to be without the government for one more day. And also, we have to understand that Ethiopia is a big country. It's the second most populous country in Africa, and has one of the best military in Africa. So Ethiopia is an enemy that Somalia cannot afford to have. And I think all this talk about Ethiopia is we had a problem. We have two wars in 1964 and in 1977, but that traditional enmity cannot continue. So instead of having Ethiopia as an enemy, I think we need to have Ethiopia as a friend.
David, do you think I could come in there?
Yes, certainly.
Yeah, because I think I see it slightly different than Abdi Wali here. Mm-hmm. In this sense, and you know, this is the problem with professors, right? They like to speak at different levels. So the first level, I would like to say, it is tragic that Somalia needs Ethiopia at this moment to support it. And had the U.S. not abandoned the TFG in its hour of need, we would have been able to get U.S. or AU troops. So I would like to put that first. Now, the second thing, however, that I would like to say is that I think that the people who are opposed to the TFG for a variety of Somali issues, including the divide that has been created by the violence in Mogadishu in 1991 and the lack of trust according to that divide, that they actually use this to some extent as an excuse, as a mask. Yeah, because it is such a nice issue to organize Somalis around, right? That you you can hide your other opposition to the process in Nairobi and the fact that it is right now the only chance for a state. Actually, the Somalis have a beautiful term for this, David, makarsar. Makarsar is when a baby camel dies, and a Somali pastoralist used to take the skin of that little calf and put it on another baby camel so that the mother camel, you know, would think that it was her own child. So this makarsar, kind of veiling the issue, because it is true that Ethiopia has been traditionally the enemy of Somali people. It has also, of course, been the neighbor with good relationship. It is also true that what's happening in Western Somalia, and I think you really should do a program maybe once about what's happening in the Somali territories of Ethiopia, and those people, we should all feel outraged for what's happening to those people, right? But nevertheless, after I say that, I have to agree with Abdul Wali that, you know, it is the best of the evils that Somalia faces right now, and I support the idea that Abdul Wali proposed, is that if this attempt at bringing law and order and at state formation does not succeed in Somalia, I do not know when it will succeed.
Well, perhaps I should just very quickly here introduce again our guests for anyone who might have recently tuned in. Lydian Kaptans, she's professor of history at Wellesley, where she teaches African and Middle Eastern history in the Department of History. She has published widely both about the history of Somalia and of Sudan. Our other guest is Abdulwali Ali. He is an economist. He is Somali himself, still has family in Somalia. He was trained both in Somalia at the National University there. there and is also a graduate of the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard and George Mason University. And we're talking about recent events in Somalia, and questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Who really was responsible for this fighting and all of the destruction that took place last month in Mogadishu? And does that really tell us that the Islamists are not beaten?
Abdul.
Okay. The latest fighting was between the Union of Islamic Courts and the Somali military forces held by the Ethiopian military. What happened was, if you remember back in December, the ICU, the Union of Islamic Courts, made a fatal and fateful error to invade the seat of the Somali government, which was in Baidoa, which you mentioned at the beginning, outside Mogadishu. But then the TFG defended itself, and with the help of the Ethiopians, they militarily defeated the ICU, the Union of Islamic Courts. But what happened was a lot of the forces of the ICU just melted away, and they went into the general population. They just melted away, and when the government came to Mogadishu, the president and the prime minister decided to have a dialogue with the population of Mogadishu. They started to have a dialogue with the clans, clan leaders, with the civil society, with the religious leaders, with the business community. And unfortunately, the ICU interpreted that as a weakness on the part of the TFG, and they staged a sort of insurgency in Mogadishu. So the latest round of this fighting was the remnants of the ICU against the Somali and the Ethiopian military in Mogadishu, the capital city.
Mm-hmm. And would you say, Abdurelli, that really since, was it the 27th of April, the war seems to be over, and that what continues is, you know, attacks, bombings, long-distance devices, which doesn't mean, therefore, that peace and order has been completely restored, but the all-out fighting that displaced so tragically so many people from Mogadishu, that fighting seems to be over.
At one point, as I understand, the African Union had promised to send peacekeepers to Somalia. Some 8,000, I think, was the number that I have read. And as of last month, about 1,500 had arrived. Would it have made a difference? Can it still make a difference if the African Union actually did fulfill this promise and provide these several thousand additional peacekeepers?
Lala?
Okay, I think that you may have to help me here, Abdurelli, because we have Rwandans on the ground.
This is the issue about the peacekeepers. The African Union pledged to have 8,000 peacekeepers in Somalia, and the objective of these peacekeepers is to replace the Ethiopian military. We want Ethiopia to leave Somalia as early as possible, and as early as feasible, militarily feasible, because we don't want Ethiopia to leave the country and then create a vacuum where, again, the instability and the lack of law and order to come back. But the problem is, with the exception of 1,500 from Uganda, other countries like Burundi, Ghana, Nigeria also pledged military to Somalia, but they don't have the logistical mechanism and the financial mechanism to bring those troops to Somalia. So as of today, they are ready to offer their support, but they lack the logistics and the transportation and the financial help. And this when the Organization of African Union, or the AU, pledged this military support for Somalia, they were expecting that the U.S. and the EU to come up with the financial support to make this possible. But unfortunately, as of now, there are no tangible financial support, either from the U.S. or from the West, or from the EU, or from the Arab countries. And the problem, the reason that these peacekeepers are not in Mogadishu today is because of lack of financial and logistical help from the international community.
Mm. Well, it seems clear that the transitional government still does face opposition, particularly from elements of the Union of Islamic Courts or from Islamist militias. Just what now? What is the status of the transitional government? How much of the country would you say that it had effective control over?
Could I start it up too early and then you can go? So first of all, I think, David, that it is not just Islamists. Yeah, the Islamists were never just Islamists. Mm. Yeah? And actually, when the Islamic courts were becoming important, it seemed that the Islamic Courts Union were also echoing, at least in part, the United Samadhi Congress of Idit days. Do you remember those days? You know, of the time of the American invasion in the 1993 and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So what is really interesting then, that what we see now is a wide variety of opposition. Some of it is Islamist opposition, there's no doubt about it. Some of them is the opposition that represent at least part of this older United Somali Congress, which, I hate to remind you, was responsible for a serious acts of ethnic cleansing, first against others and later on within its own ranks in Mogadishu. And then thirdly, and I think this is a huge element and we rarely talk about it, there are groups of people, and there are warlords, there are opportunists, Danastayal, the Somalis call them, people who have made money out of war.
Mm-hmm.
People who are making money out of war, who have been sitting, remember last time we talked about this triangle of occupation from Mogadishu to Baidaba, Baidoa, to Kismayo, where actually the people who were actually forcing other people, the owners of the land, to work for them, yeah, and exploiting their labor, that those are the people who have everything to lose. They have grown fat on this triangle, which is economically the richest triangle in Somalia in terms of resources, and they don't want peace either. So there is a variety of elements that are trying to see whether there's an opening for power. And a lot of that, therefore, is going on, is that. And I think, you know, disarmament will be a very important instrument for this. And Abdulwadi, maybe you can comment a little bit on how far the reach of the TFG is right now.
We have to understand that the government, the TFG, came to Mogadishu in December. So it was just about like 4 or 5 months ago. So apart from the two northern states, the Somaliland and Puntland, the TFG is basically controls most of the country in the south, with the except of a few areas where it's still there's some hostility because of the remnants of the ICU. When they were defeated in Mogadishu, they dispersed and went into some central regions of the country where there's some sort of hostility towards the TFG. But by and large, the TFG, although it's not fully in terms of security and in terms of military power, they're not in control of most of the country, but the majority, by far, 80-90% of the Somalis support the reestablishing of the Somali state, the Somali institutions, the Somali government, and also to see for the last 70 years, there was no sort, any sort of semblance of government in most of Somalia. So there's a huge support for the TFG in most of the country, mm-hmm. I can say.
Can I add to that, David?
Yes, please.
So one of the things, I was talking to a friend from Brava, who is in Canada but who talks to people back home on a regular basis. And Brava is a city south of Mogadishu, but not as far south as Kismayo. And Brava is one of the places that has been occupied by people who took the town, took over the houses, and expelled a large number of the local population, who also are culturally and even linguistically distinct. So you can actually talk about Bravanese in a very particular way. And he actually said that the occupiers, the people who are forcing other people to labor for them, the people who live in other people's houses, they have not, so the warlords, right? I'm not talking about common people, the warlords. They are there, they've hidden their arms, and they're waiting to see what happens in Mogadishu. And the people who want these people off their backs are saying, listen, we understand that the government has to secure Mogadishu first. Mogadishu is the place where the TFG is being challenged more than any place else. And we've waited for 16 years to be able to come back to ruling ourselves. We can wait for another 6 months. Now, I thought that was really interesting. So the present government is not yet able to pay attention to them. It is doing a little bit more in the areas around Baidaba. And actually, one of the things that for me is sort of, you know, it's a bitter joy, I must say, because I was so against a government based on clan representation. But it is actually using clan representation to give the little places around Baidaba self-government. So people are sort of have to choose their own representatives, and then those own representatives begin to implement local policies. And the cleaning up is one of the things that they do, and the Islamic Courts did that too.
Just for a moment, we have some callers, and I'm interested in having Dr. Ali comment on something that Professor Kapton said, and I think that it's an important point, and that is it goes back to the original question about why it is that now for 16, 17 years things have been the way that they have, is that there are people who are invested in and profit by the continuing chaos. And who don't want to see peace and stability. They think it's just fine with it going along like that. What do you do about people like that, and is it possible to get them on board, or are those people somehow going to have to be sidelined ultimately for an effort like the transitional government to be successful?
I think the government has to do two things. One is the government has to force. Has to use force where force is needed. Basically, meaning that sometimes we say that we cannot make an omelet without breaking the eggs. So you have to use force where force is needed. But also, the government is now starting to have a national reconciliation conference. They want to bring the clan leaders, the civil society, the religious leaders, the business community, to have a national dialogue. We have been without government for 17 years, so we cannot afford another 17 years. So what the government is doing is two-pronged approach of this issue. One is to defeat militarily those who understand force, but also at the same time to bring more people to their fold and to create this national dialogue so that Somalia will be Somalia again.
David, could I add?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
What is really interesting, I think, is that, you know, do you know where Groucho Marx is saying, these are my principles, and if you don't like them, I have others? Well, I must say that the political leaders in Somalia, that I think characterizes a lot of them very well. And so I think that if the TFG is the winning party, people will join. Warlords will join the TFG. Look at who's the mayor of Mogadishu right now, right?
Yes.
So I think that they can be bought, if I can be so blunt. And if they cannot be bought, the TFG, led by Abdullahi Yusuf, who after all is a general, and his credentials and a general outweigh far his credentials as a Democrat. He will try to suppress them, and I think people know that he means business. So I think, but there are, of course, principled people, and among the Islamists, yeah, there are warlords, there are, you know, there are opportunists, but there are also principled people.
Yes.
Those people, I think, can be brought, must be brought to the fold by power sharing and by compromise. Then some of them, I think, may have to be repressed, and others, I think, can be bought. They will join the winning party. And I think the only reason, frankly, that I have a modicum of support for the TFG is because that's what I think, that if the TFG can get the support to be successful in bringing back law and order, that a lot of the people who are the loudest now, calling them traitors for bringing in Ethiopia and all the other thing, will actually quietly look for their share.
We have about 10 minutes left, and we have a couple of callers here I want to include. And also, for the benefit of anybody who might have tuned in here in the last little bit, I'd like to introduce again our guests. Lydian Kaptans is a Kendall Hodder Professor of History at Wellesley College, where she teaches African and Middle Eastern history. She's published widely about the history of both Somalia and Sudan. And also Abdulwali Ali, he is an economist. He is Assistant Professor of Economics at Niagara University. That's in Niagara, New York. He is Somali himself, was educated there, has had his economics degree from Somali National University, also studied public administration at the Kennedy School of Government, and has a PhD from George Mason University. And questions are welcome here, but again, the callers will help us by being brief, as we do only have about 10 minutes left in the show. We have first in line someone in Savoy. This is line one. Hello.
Well, if you hadn't gone on so long. But anyway, my question is, did I miss it? Have you talked about Somaliland versus Somalia yet?
No.
Anything to be said about
yes.
Somaliland?
Absolutely. I would like to say something about Somaliland very much. I think that the people of Somaliland absolutely have to be saluted for bringing back a modicum of peace to many of the inhabitants. They celebrated the 16th birthday of their self-declared independent state just last weekend. And so I think that nothing can be said about them without saying first that. And then I would like to talk about a couple of problems, because I also think that there are problems. For example, basing oneself on the former British Somaliland, which consisted really of three main areas, right? West and then real west and then northwest and east. And I think the problem is that the people in the east do not necessarily want to be part of Somaliland. A less friendly interpretation would be they are playing Puntland off against Somaliland. And so that area continues to be a casus belli, a reason for war and violence between Puntland and Somaliland. So I think that's one of the problems that really is a problem to Somaliland. The second problem will be very interesting to watch, because some of the leaders of Somaliland who were part of those who promoted and pushed for secession in 1991 now are sitting with the transitional federal government in Baidoa. So that is, I think, an issue. And then I think another problem, I think, is that it is said that Eritrea wants to cause problems in the area. But I wanted to make another point. There are contradictory news, rumors, I shall call them. There's two interpretations of the current events. One set of news items says Somaliland is closer to international recognition, recognition as an independent state by the international community as ever before. And there are many very respectable and wise people pushing for that. But on the other hand, then there is the news that if the TFG is going to be successful, that Ethiopia and the U.S., because really it is the U.S. behind Ethiopia, let's be fair, are pushing Somaliland to become part of a unified Somalia. But if that were to happen, these news people say, it would be like a Kurdistan situation, a super autonomous Somaliland that might be part of a reunited Somalia. Now, the speculation itself is very dangerous because I think there are in Somaliland people who also, through the suffering that they have gone through the violence perpetrated against them by the about to fall Siad Barre government, they absolutely cannot stomach that. And so I think those speculations can, for the moment, create more unrest in the area. And my personal opinion is, I would be not honest if I said if I didn't have a dream at some point of a united Somalia, but my dream, I'm an outsider. Who am I to dream for the Somalis? One thing I would say, Somaliland should not be touched ever by force. That's a very personal response to that.
All right. Well, let's go to another caller here. This is Champaign County. It's line number two. Hello.
Hi. The remnants of colonialism, I think that's the important thing to point out, that you mentioned British Somaliland, that the area has been contested and it isn't just the flip-flopping of Siad Barre through the Cold War period that has set all of this up, it seems to me. But I want to question one of the major players in the area as to its motives, and that's the U.S. I don't think the U.S. really valorizes stability that much, or even democracy. Obviously, they've just gotten through a couple of $1 billion for Ethiopia after a rather fraudulent election. The U.S. has you have to look at it in the grand area strategy. The U.S. has just opened a central command for Africa. It had before that the Trans-Sahel Strategic Initiative. This is cast as rather without reflection as a response to terrorism, but these kind of plans and grand area strategy predate all of this, and the root of it is the proximity, it seems to me, to the prize, the oil in the Middle East, and now the oil in Africa itself, and this is might be dismissed as rather crude, but I think that's a good pun, too. Thank you.
All right. Go ahead and give both of you a chance to speak to what the caller had to say. Brett, maybe Professor Ali, do you want to start?
Yes. Whatever the grand designs the U.S. has or doesn't have in Somalia, doesn't matter now, because the problem is there is a real threat that they see. And that outweighs all the other issues. And that issue is the threat of terrorism in the Horn of Africa. And as I said before, the U.S. came in now, and they are supporting the TFG. And the main reason is because the threat of Al-Qaeda in the Horn of Africa. We have to remind our listeners that the suspects of the, as I said, of the 1998 bombing in the Nairobi and Dar es Salaam were sheltered by the ICU, the Union of Islamic Courts, in Mogadishu, Somalia. So they see that real threat, and that's why they are now really fully on board with the TFG. And last week, the U.S. nominated a new ambassador for Somalia, and who is a career diplomat who has over 40 years' experience in Africa. So I can say there's an interest. They might not be, you might interpret it as not a genuine interest, but there's a real interest in Somalia to have its own government and to bring the law and order back and to deny Al-Qaeda to have a safe haven in Somalia.
Yes, David, and if I were to come in, I'd go about it a little bit differently. First of all, I think we should add the caller to the program next time. He seems to be extremely well-informed, and he, you know, he takes the debate to a different level than we were doing. And I guess that, of course, I'm a historian, and that may explain some of this. I do not see the U.S. government anymore as just one thing. And so what I've become really interested in, who is pushing what in the U.S. government? For example, the U.S. that was helped build the TFG out of this very unpromising material of warlords, was it the same U.S. government that was putting the Mogadishu warlords on its payroll and therefore undermining the TFG? And now the U.S. is flipping back to the TFG and is with Ethiopia. What is Yates? John Yates, the special envoy who has just been appointed, seems to be a supporter of the TFG, which, if this is where this U.S. support is going now, is a good thing, rather than giving them a envoy who is against the TFG, right? So my question is, I'm really struggling to understand exactly what's happening within the U.S. government, who's, you know, calling the shots at any point. But I think that the caller is completely right that neither Ethiopia nor the U.S., nor, by the way, why aren't people talking more about the 16 years of suitcases full of Arab money that has been entering Mogadishu, dominating everything from language education, the whole educational system, infrastructure, etc. You know, nobody really in the end is really interested in the Somalis, I think. And so it is up to the Somalis now, and they're in this very unenviable position because they wasted 16 years in some senses, that now they have these very powerful interests playing along with them. And they might be able to outwit each other. I'm not sure they will be able to outwit, you know, those international interests. And that is my biggest fear right now.
Mm. Well, what I just turned back to Dr. Ali. What do you think that is there, do you think, here a constructive role for the United States to play?
Absolutely. And they already started doing that, which is basically is to support the only political process in place today, which is the TFG. And although they are not yet forthcoming with a lot of financial support, remember, the whole infrastructure of Somalia in terms of institutions, the whole infrastructure is destroyed. So Somalia needed a lot of help in terms of reconstruction, redevelopment, bringing back the government institutions. So if we look at that, the U.S. is not forthcoming with a lot of financial support for the TFG, but at least they are starting now to help diplomatically and also to provide logistical support for the peacekeeping forces. They already did for the Ugandan peacekeeping forces that came to Somalia 2 months ago. So this is start now, although it's not as much as the government needs or as much as expected from the U.S., the only superpower in the world today.
Hmm. Do you, I wonder, do either, just to pick up on one of the things that the caller said, do either you have concern about the potential for the United States to become increasingly involved militarily in Africa more than it has in the past, in part, I guess, in substantial part, because of the interest of the United States in securing those places where there is oil?
I think that the U.S. is mostly working through other countries. Like at this moment, Ethiopia is a very powerful player for the U.S. and with the U.S. in the Horn of Africa. And some of the opposition to Ethiopia's presence in Somalia comes out of that, because if you are, you know, an oppressed group of subjects within Ethiopia, then this connection between Ethiopia and the U.S. is horrible. Right, and so it might be doing something good for the TFG and potentially for Somalia, but what is it going to do for the Somalis inside the country? So I don't think that the U.S. itself, and I don't think the U.S. has capacity right now to majorly get involved militarily in any way, but I also don't think that they need to, because they will, if they provide support, financial support to the U.N. and the AU, they don't need to. But they will be involved. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. And the oil, of course, that's one of the problems, too, that oil has been discovered in what we call Western Somalia, so the Somali regions of Ethiopia. And there was a bloodbath yesterday. It was 2 days ago in that area by Ethiopian troops.
Do you, I'm going to ask the same question to Dr. Ali, about, do you have concerns, do you think, about increasing American military involvement in Africa?
I really don't, and I don't see them doing that right now. except that having few contingent forces or rapid reaction forces in West Africa, East Africa, and maybe in North Africa. So I don't see them in the near term or in the short term. I don't see a threat. To be honest, I don't see military involvement, the U.S. military involvement in Africa as a threat. Mm-hmm. I don't see that in the short term. In the long term, maybe there's some problems, but in the short term, I don't.
Well, maybe just to conclude, I can ask you to talk, each of you, for a moment. Unfortunately, we're at the end, to talk a little bit about why it is that Somalia, what happens in Somalia, should be important to Americans.
Okay, can I start?
Yeah.
I think, David, that's how I was trying to start out my remarks, but maybe I wasn't clear enough. I think that, first of all, I think that the U.S. has invested enormously in the Somali peace process and in bringing about this transitional government. And I think, therefore, they also made mistakes by supporting those Mogadishu warlords. I think they're back on track. And I think that we are so deeply involved. We are involved with Ethiopia. So, you cannot pretend that this is not part of American policy abroad. And I think we should not. You know, sometimes you see people, if the U.S. is on the side, they automatically take the other side. Inform yourself. They're not always on the wrong side, even if sometimes for the wrong reasons. Mm. Right? So that's what I would say to that. And the other thing I would say is that, and I must say, I was so moved after September 11 how Americans from across, from east, from coast to coast, came out to support the victims of September 11. I think Americans have enormously large hearts. And I think that the victims of the fighting that may at this point, fighting which became inevitable, those should never, leave our hearts. And I think we should push for the support and for the relief for those between 80 to 200,000 displaced people in the Mogadishu area.
Well, we're going to have to stop there. I'm afraid Professor Ali will have to give Professor Captains the last word because we're here at the end of the time. I certainly do want to thank both of you. Abdulwali Ali, he's Assistant Professor of Economics at Niagara University, Niagara, New York. Dr. Ali, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And Lydian Captains, she's professor of history at Wellesley College, has written widely on the history of both Somalia and Sudan. And Professor Captains, thank you.
Thank you.